Looks like Charlie.
That's Charlie Bryce.
Charlie Bryce. All right, Charlie. Charlie Bryce, come on up here, Reese.
I didn't know I was supposed to sign up.
Hey.
Can I stand?
Yeah, sure. Okay, I just want to say again, I passed out a little leaflet. I'm going to have a book launch. My second book is coming out and be out in a couple weeks, but I'm going to launch July 14th at the C.C. Miller Library. Hope to see you all there with M.L. Liebler, the Detroit poet, and Judy Robinson, and Scott Silsby. Anyway, so this poem was just published in Main Street Rag. It's called Black Hole. When I gazed into my rearview mirror or turned my buzzing head to look behind me, there was no behind me. Laramie had gone missing, disappeared. What swilling a six-pack of Olympia and downing 30 micrograms of acid could do in 1969. Blotto on blotter, the visual past obliterated, I was reduced to a laggard who had lost his way in a town easily traversed end to end in 15 minutes, an inner spaceman who discovered that if you don't know where you've been, you can never know where you're going. Thank you.
It looks like Judy.
Judy Bryce.
Bryce, where are you at, Judy? Judy, you're hiding from me. Okay.
Right behind you. How come you don't have eyes in the back of your head, huh? I used
to. Hi, everybody. I have bifurcated vision. It goes that way. Anyway, so this poem is called Of Grace, Hatred, and Ladybugs. And it starts with an epigraph. Maybe grace is what we do without hatred. It's in Praying Mantis by Anne Marie Macari. Where did it go, that grace without hatred? How did it turn, vanish, then leave us lost? Trash us to bins of void, the banished spaces. We can't go back. The maws of rent and rage are all too close upon our hungry, crying minds, too desperate now from putrefying lies. Even the praying mantis kindly dotes upon her cuddly caterpillar kin before she moves in poised reflection, even elegant contemplation to strike. But hey, here's the rub. We've overlooked our touch, forgotten the elegance of dragonflies, their flit of parchment wings to airs of gossamer dance. Their grasp of hate never was. They leave only shadows behind. Where did it go, that grace, when maws of hate and rage roared through our gentle world, devoured even the tiny ladybug, whose house was on fire, her children alone?
This is either Walt Whitman or Walt Peterson, but I think it is Walt Peterson. Come on, Walt.
Hi. Famous belly buttons I have known. Tanya. See this fuzz? Yeah. Every time we make love, I'll give you some. Hope I get enough to make a pillow, a mattress. We'll see. Piercing. The first time he saw her with her navel exposed, a hoop sparkling, it turned his stomach. The second time, yeah, he got it. The ancient story made sexy and perverse. Nothing new here. The third time, he figured he might attach a gold chain to the hoop and pull her around. But who'd want someone that stupid, vain, and innocent following you? Moral. You got it, huh? Moral. His studio was on a hill at the bend of the road. The sculptor took damaged, rotten, and nuisance trees from the town and gave them life as art. Tables, torsos, sculptures, wall hangings, smoothed, glossed, loved once again. One day a car towing a U-Haul trailer came past, and the trailer uncoupled. The car kept going. The trailer rolled at a tangent to the bend. He was standing outside his studio. The tongue of the trailer impaled the sculptor. Naval gazers, beware. His disciples carved the bowl like a woman's torso, with the bottom rounded to sit on his head. They filled the torso with sacred oil. The master had been falling asleep during his meditation. Uncle Frank said, "Hey, light the son of a bitch. See if he falls asleep now." Mom. "What's this, Mom?" "It's your belly button." "Where'd it come from?" "Me." "Then we're connected?" "Yep." "I love you." Dad. "What's this, Dad?" "Don't touch that." "What is it?" "Your belly button. Don't mess with it." "What'll happen?" "It holds you together. You don't want your bum to fall off, do you?" "Oh, thank you."
The lady with the silver screw in her belly button. They unscrewed it and her ass fell off. That was a joke when we was a little boy. That was not funny then either. Aaron Novick. Aaron, come on.
The coffee grinder is drowning out the radio's nebulous voices. Snow falls, frivolous, widely spaced, melting on impact. The barista listens as a customer details the relative caliber of sundry fast food coffees, assigning each its proper grade. Death is the end for which we are made.
I don't know why I was thinking of that silver screw, Walter. I apologize. I forgot my good friend, Judy Robinson. Please, Judy, it is my fault. Come.
I know why. It was a tale of two Judys. I can't read with my group, Poetry Exchange, Pittsburgh Poetry Exchange, on the 22nd. So thanks, and lovely to see you all. Thank you. Two quick poems, one old one and one new one. This is an old one. It's called Ways and Means for Vivian. When she wants to be kissed and petted, She tells kindly lies that stretch like clothespin laundry, angled to grab up sunlight. Yesterday's soiled underthings flap bright and new. If the day is clean and the wind is right, she lies and the garments lie, and both are considered, if not entirely lovable, at least good enough. When she wants to be loved without condition, she whispers kindly promises. These rise in the air like coveys of tiny birds determined to fly south, although the way is fraught with shearing wind and raging night storms. And if the man is full-hearted and fresh enough, love is offered like sweetened coffee in the morning, just as the first cool updraft arrives and a whole new universe of birds takes off. This I just wrote. This is called April 25th, 2018. The first true pastel day. Pink, lime, yellow. Made up so gaudy, the eye tears. Springtime, late this year. 3 days until my son's birthday. The only perfect decision I ever made in this life. No abortion. So I thank myself 46 times now. I pass a workman in a slicker and cap, wires on the ground around him. Watch your step. I will. And I know learned folk who say this matters as much as my precious son's birth. Every hair on David's head is counted. So the workman in the street, his appearance in the consummate tapestry. Thanks.
Oh boy. Thank you, Judy. I always enjoy your work. Stefan, where you at? Hey, Stefan, my man. I think we have you scheduled this year, do we not? You are scheduled to read here this year also, are you not?
No.
You come read with me.
I'll always read after Hemingway's, hopefully. Like Judy, this is the new poem. I'm sure a few of you have heard this. Awning. Appalachia, softening herself up. The lift low cloud in quick hand movements, strips measured light extended into vapors, thoughtlessly. Indecision is as the cloud's tufts reaching down. A leaf fell off onto my windshield like a sailboat. Added to a picture, he stayed there the whole trip. Nearly to the end of the range of mountains, rolling back and forth endlessly as a carefree wisp.
Thank you, Stefan. This looks like my friend John Bao. The bad cop. Come on.
So, okay, thank you. So this is just an opportunity to share a poem that actually I'll be reading at the Heinz Center, and I just wanted to share it with you tonight because I especially hope that you'll come out for that event. Heinz Center, and this is with an RSVP, by the way. You actually have to email me and let me know you're coming because you have to figure out how many chairs to set up or call me on the phone, okay? Because, you know, got to do the chair thing. This is a poem by Kermit Jackson, who was the second facilitator of the Squirrel Hill Workshop. It was Sue, Samuel Elkin, Kermit Jackson, and then Rosalie Rothman. And Kermit was an ex- exceptional poet. And oddly enough, there isn't a lot of his work that's available. But we're going to try, if anybody has a poem of his or has a journal that had a poem of his, we'd really like to get a copy of that to go into the archive at the Heinz Center. I'm going to read you one poem that comes out of Pittsburgh and Tri-State Area Poets, and we actually have some copies of this. So we may have some copies that night. We may actually be able to give people. We'll see if we've got enough. And this is Kermit. The Pleiades, in the skies of Pittsburgh, in the skies of Pittsburgh, Grandad, I have seen the Pleiades at the heart of our shared sign. You know that faint cluster named for Atlas's seven daughters? No, you wouldn't, Grandad. And good thing, clean skies, empty bellies, you would say. Then choke that sickened laugh. God, I always see you frail, but on the edge of memory, like those stars on the edge of sight, I recall before the words that end in sighs, angina, emphysema, when your bird frame still retained the wiry strength that played against the homestead grays. What position? That has fled, but not the red palms that fire stung from a ball thrown true, and you in the old photographs, pale smudge in a Crawford uniform. There are 100 Pleiades, Grandad, though we only see a few, and only when it's clear, very clear. Even today, in the skies above Pittsburgh. Kermit Jackson, Kermit Jackson.
Kermit was a fun person and a very good poet. I had the pleasure of meeting him and watch him over the years. John Zedlick.
Thanks. I have a full-length collection coming out next year called Salient Points and Sharp Angles, so I'm trying to promote myself, something I'm not very good at, but I thought I should try. So I'll read two poems. These are from the collection. It's called Just Plinkin'. Just Plinkin'. My Uncle Matty told my dad he bought a .22 caliber pistol and was taking it up on the mountain to horse around, blasting at this and that, wandering the winding ruts above the invisible, the abandoned, but still burning hard coal mines. My dad advised caution. Just plinkin', his brother responded, insouciance easing in his voice. Like the bullet taking the barrel's leave, I imagined the ricochet of that lead marble. Off shredded, yellowed paper target, backed by gray plywood, once used for sighting rifles in hunting seasons past. Or collapsed can or tire or stump, careening down the slope, piercing a human head in the valley. The plink had grown fatally percussive. But I really don't know. The plinks may have been only finally inert, just finding rest in discarded green undergrowth, or rocketing into infinite interstellar sky. Thanks. One more. It's called Hard Word. The word at the end of the world waits for me against a salt corner, hard as a slice that shreds the skin for an instant to reveal raw flesh, waiting for the flow in that dry instant where one embraces the possibility of only arroyo drifting air to the dermis, and hardly a notice, therefore, from eye and finger that would rush antiseptic and bandage to the gap. But blood appears, capillary culled, and one must register the rip. Hope for no suture need while applying pressure, awaiting the clot. Then take the word like a wound, back tucked for the trek, deposited in depth, leaving me light-handed for the next one lodged in that far angle. Thank you.
The next reader is my friend and my publisher and the man that has honored me so often, Bob Zoller. Please come.
This is a Ten Ku. It just has 10 syllables. White blossoms giving back snow to the sky. Thank you.
I'm going to close this up tonight. Did we miss anyone at all? No one. Walter, would you like to read another poem if you have one? Yes, you. I like your poetry. Please come. Read another poem. It's not like we're getting our teeth filled. Please.
Those eyes. She had those eyes that we called Manson lamps. She had those eyes Kevorkian loved, and police registered when they saw them. Ordnance, ballistic, incendiary, armored piercing, shaped charges. She had those eyes. One stud said, I'd spend the night with her, but she killed me. She had those eyes. She had those eyes that said, one night at a party, I'd kiss you, but I'm a married woman. I saw the gold sparkle in the green iris of those eyes she had when she spoke. I threw this on the potter's wheel, she said. The clay, the water, the heat of my own hands like a kiln. I want you to think of me, those eyes said. Four small cups and two cruets, like the one the priest used later at her young funeral. Through incense and flowers, acrid and sweet, he spoke. When I first met her, she looked at me and said, Father, this better be a good school for my daughters. I knew that she meant it, the old man said. She had those eyes.